multiple group. We plug this into an ANOVA. We've got chain stores, privately owned stores, and co-ops. We get these means, and we get this F. There's a difference between the groups. We don't know where the difference is, but we know there's a difference somewhere among those groups. Dummy code. I want to make private the comparison group. I want to make private the comparison group for a couple of reasons. One, it's the most common. Privately owned pet stores are way more common than chain pet stores or co-op pet stores. Also, notice it has the average that's in the middle.
Is it more common that there's five chain stores
or 3 or 5? In the world, not in the data set.
Gotcha.
Okay? And that's the kind of decision you got to make. You're right. Sadly, that's changing, but I'll try not to go into a tirade. So, we're going to, in this first comparison, we're going to compare chain stores to private stores. In the second, we're going to compare co-op stores to private stores. How do we know that private stores are a comparison? They've got a zero on both codes. That other zero helps create the correct collinearity between the two predictors. Well, if we left this out, then these people would drop out of the analysis. So if we made this 1, 0 and missing, they would disappear out of the analysis. They wouldn't be part of it.
But how are they in the analysis now if we're only comparing the one?
Because both of these are in the analysis. So this regression weight is the difference between this and the average of those two, controlling for the difference between this and the average of those two. And this and the average of those two, controlled for this and the average of those two, becomes the difference between this and that. Okay? And there's no great way to show that unless you know how to do a thing called communality analysis. So I'm going to do it. Trust me.
Okay.
I'm not lying to you.
And this is all because the whole point of regressions is about collinearity.
Yeah,
regression.
Controlling for collinearity, talking about unique contribution.
To the model.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, notice that the F is the same F. Why? Same three groups with the same three means. Doesn't matter how you represent it, you should get the same answer for the overall model. This is the mean of the comparison group, which was private, which was 7.33. This tells us that there's no mean difference between the target group for dummy code 1, which was chain stores, and the comparison group, private stores. This tells us that the target group for dummy code 2, which was co-op stores, has a mean 3.083 less than private stores, and that mean difference is statistically significant. So you can track these numbers onto the three group means up above.
So when you're reporting these, like if you're writing this up, you would write out the ANOVA and then you would use the regression information as sort of your post hoc analysis? Or?
Well, there's no such thing as post hoc analysis in regression. What you have here are two a priori pairwise comparisons, both conducted at the O5 level. If you want to do the post hoc thing, then you bond for own eyes. I've got two tests here, so I'm going to test each of them at the 025. You will rarely see that done. But you could do that. Does that help?
Yeah.
Effects codes. The only difference between the dummy codes and the effect codes is that now the comparison group has a negative 1 for both codes. We still get the same model, because it's still the same three groups with the same three means. How we represent it doesn't change the overall model, but it does change the interpretation of the regression weights. Now, the constant is the grand mean. Effect code 1 tells us the difference between the grand mean and chain stores, which is significantly different. And store effect code 2 tells us the difference between the grand mean and co-op stores. So the effect code significance tests will be different than the dummy code significance tests because we're representing different comparisons. The dummy codes are pairwise comparisons. The effect codes are comparisons of two conditions with the grand mean. Different things, you get different results. How are we doing? Yeah?
When might we ask a question that would be interested in difference relative to grand mean in this context?
In 30 years, I've done it 3 times.
Okay.
And they were all medical. Where we were asking, because in medical, we didn't actually have a comparison group. So what we had is a whole bunch of different conditions which were deemed centered around a no treatment control. Some were conditions that should actually exacerbate the conditions, others should improve it. And so these folks decided, made me twitch and itch, but decided that this set of conditions on average was the grand mean. So their grand mean was essentially an untreated control. So I used effects comparisons to compare each of these others with an untreated control. When I went back and did a literature review, it was really close. But, I mean, wow, really contrived. If you come to me and you say, can I use comparison with a grand mean instead of running a comparison group? I no. But work that time. We don't normally have both conditions that are designed to make things better and conditions that are designed to make things worse in a way that offsets, so that on average we have nothing in our study. We tend to take, you know, the control group, and we want to make things better. We rarely run a, hey, let's screw up some more condition.
But what if you don't know what your baseline is at all?
That's why you have to run a comparison group. We substituted for a comparison group a grand mean because it just happened to work out. It was close enough to cheat. But it was cheating. I mean, in the world I grew up in, you run a comparison group. So you can see how convoluted that story is to get to something where you're going to care about difference from the grand mean instead of differences between groups.
Cal, did they not do any because they didn't want to withhold therapy?
Yes.
So everybody got something.
Everybody got something because they were trying to maximize sample use. This is one of those times when I got the data long after design was decided, or Calvi would have had a fit, and we'd have had a control group. They tried it both before and after, and the grand mean was nowhere near because of numbers in the different groups. I mean, you can represent that population beautifully, put a different number of people in it, and it drags the grand mean around. So it was literally pure luck. And I only knew it was luck after about a 300-article meta-analysis. Fun with numbers! All right, again, let me take you back to the first page and remind you that we are not trying to substitute ANOVA with regression. But we are trying to take stuff that we would naturally do in ANOVA and fit it into regression so that we can have a model that has the quantitative predictors and the binary predictors and the multiple category predictors all in one model. If you go back several years, many years, before most of you, in fact, back in the early 60s, you would sometimes see where they'd run a regression model with all the quantitative variables in the regression model, then a series of ANOVAs, one with each of the categorical variables. And then they're trying to tell a story, but they only have part of the collinearity structure. Because you've got, you know, multiple regression for all of these predictors and unique contributions among them, and then a series of bivariate analyses that aren't controlled for each other or the stuff into multiple regression. And you got to try and tell a story from this mixture of things. It's like looking at part of a correlation matrix and part of a multiple regression model and trying to tell the right story. it's going to go badly. In fact, there was a rash of master's theses and dissertations that were reanalyzing those data in a model, in a regression model, where it just did those coded variables and stuck them in, and the world changed. And, you know, some of those articles had led to changes in policy, some to changes in law, some to changes in treatment regimes, many of them to changes in theory, and they were just plain wrong. We got to be able to put all the kinds of variables that we care about together into one model. Pat?
Is there a particular statistician who is associated with this newer development?
Here's the really scary part. No. We knew this immediately. Fisher represented this in the 20s. But it was back then, because there weren't statistical packages and you had to hand compute everything, ANOVAs were way easier to do than multiple regression. So everything that could possibly be wedged into an ANOVA was, instead of everything fitting into the parent model of regression. Because, I mean, in the 20s, literally hand calculated, all paper and pencil. Hell, quills. It was what?
Just a sea change.
But because it was so complicated to do, it didn't get taught. It got taught among the mathematicians and the statisticians, but it wasn't taught to us who have the data. And so we did what we were taught, which was regressions for quantitative variables, ANOVAs for categorical variables. And then do the best you can. And then when the statistical packages hit in the late 60s, you started to see a beginning of this recognition that we could put it all together. There are some books, Graybill, for example, that was originally published in the 30s. When that same book came out in the 50s, it didn't have the chapter on coding. When it came out again after Frank's death in the middle 70s, it had that chapter back in, because now we had statistical packages that could do it. So yeah, there's a lot of sociology. There's a lot of sociology and psychology to data analysis, as is done by those of us in the trench. The statisticians have always known this stuff was true. But whether it gets passed down or not is strongly tied to fashion. Ugh.